Labor Day weekend 2002 in a nice neighborhood near Hollywood where an SUV was found burning on a side street.
Firefighters and cops descend on this normally sleepy neighborhood. And when the firefighters extinguished the blaze and they got a closer look, what they saw shocked them. Inside, two young men, their bodies riddled with bullets. When the detectives roll up to this, I mean, the first thing that pops into their minds is this is some kind of a gang killing or it's related to drugs somehow.
It appeared that they had been executed.
The victims were 35-year-old Michael Tardio, a doorman at a Hollywood nightclub, and he's doing modeling on the side. And 31-year-old Chris Monson. He was a loyal friend, and for that loyalty, he got repaid with a shower of bullets.
As it turns out, these guys were out peddling over $1 million worth of jewelry that I had given my girlfriend, and that's effectively what got them killed. These jewels are definitely cursed.
Call it a curse, I call it really playing with fire. Neither of the victims had anything in their background that would suggest that they would fall prey to such a crime.
Little did we know all the twists and turns that were going to happen in this case. Over time, our investigation took us from the pages of Playboy magazine to an international prostitution ring and ultimately to a multi-million dollar scam on Wall Street.
It's got all the elements that you would want in a Hollywood script. It has jewels, greed, sex, and ultimately murder.
You could say it haunts me, it does. I think about it quite a bit, more than I should.
What haunts retired Los Angeles homicide detective Bill Cox is the unsolved murders of those two handsome young men who had come to Hollywood to chase their dreams.
In all my 20 years of working homicide, I have never run across a case like this one.
It's a case that has frustrated police in Hollywood since 2002.
Which is why we're doing a different 48 hours. Look, I gotta tell you, there's no trial, there's not even an arrest. But Bill Cox and a number of detectives here are convinced this double homicide can be solved, perhaps with your help. We begin by telling you what we've learned about this crime and its two victims.
Both young men came from successful families.
There was a search warrant.
Andrew Blankstein with the Los Angeles Times is one of the country's top crime reporters.
Michael Tardio, he's out in LA. He's kind of living the fast life.
Yeah, just a clean-cut looking guy. He was well-liked, and maybe he just hadn't found his way yet. Chris Monson comes from a pretty tight-knit family. They had some storage facilities that they owned.
Chris Monson is running the family's business here. By all accounts, Tardio and Monson were close friends and hadn't been in trouble with the law.
Which made the events on the morning of September 2nd, 2002, so shocking. The bodies of Michael Tardio and Christopher Monson were found in this luxury SUV. They had been shot at close range. The killer or killers tried to burn the vehicle.
Were their fingerprints other than Tardio and Monson's in that SUV?
No, there was no identifiable fingerprints found in there. There was no really usable evidence. The vehicle was parked probably right about in this area right here.
Detective Cox took us back to the upscale North Hollywood neighborhood where the SUV was discovered.
None of the people that lived in that neighborhood had heard any shots at all.
It's not the kind of place that normally that you're gonna find two people murdered on the street. And so the theory is that the two men were shot somewhere else and then brought to that street where the car was later lit on fire.
As investigators dug into the victims' backgrounds, they discovered that Michael Tardio had a girlfriend that most men could only dream of. Someone millions of men had seen naked. Sandy Bentley, Playboy cover girl and former live-in lover of the world's most famous bachelor, Hugh Hefner.
She's one of the kind of the first wave of, you know, post-divorce Hugh Hefner women who are living at the mansion while he's single and sowing his oats.
Sandy and her identical twin sister, Mandy, had their 15 minutes of fame back in 2000 as the Bentley twins. They lived with Hef at the Playboy Mansion, sharing his famous circular bed and sharing some airtime as well, appearing on some of television's most popular shows, like Sex and the City.
Oh, drinking with three blondes, I guess that's just a regular day for you.
A slow one, yes.
The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
Can I tell you something?
Uh-huh.
Oh, you topped yourself.
Yeah, yeah. That's what life's all about.
And Two and a Half Men, where they played party girls.
Oh, for God's sake.
Twins, Alan. I got them for you, but you can share if you want.
Hef had a thing for twins. I think Hef loved Sandy. I definitely think that he was genuine about his feelings.
Isabella St. James is another former live-in Hef girlfriend who wrote about life at the Playboy Mansion in her book, Bunny Tales. She has nothing good to say about Sandy Bentley.
From what I was told by the mansion staff, the twins, Sandy and Mandy, had caused Hef a lot of heartache and grief.
Heartache, she says, like when Hef learned Sandy was cheating on him while still sharing his bed.
You're not supposed to date other guys. You know, Hef is very possessive. When you're his girl, you're his girl.
But in the late summer of 1999, while still living at the Playboy Mansion, long before Sandy began dating Michael Tardio, she quietly became involved with this man. Multi-millionaire Mark Yagala, a self-described Wall Street whiz kid.
I was looking for the ultimate trophy.
Yagala had big dreams, and Sandy quickly became a part of them when he was introduced to her by another Playboy model.
I stole her from Hugh Hefner, the ultimate heterosexual icon.
And was Hef happy with that?
No, he was not. I am persona non grata at the Playboy Mansion.
Head over heels, Yagala began buying his Playboy bunny spectacular world-class jewelry, like an exact copy of the ruby and diamond necklace and earrings that Richard Gere gave Julia Roberts in the movie Pretty Woman.
Oh. It was her favorite movie.
And how much did that cost you?
$250,000.
$250,000?
Adding insult to betrayal.
We've had major fundraisers here.
Hef didn't know during this interview that Sandy was wearing Yagala's diamonds, a $150,000 necklace and earring set. But this was just the tip of the diamond iceberg. When Sandy wanted bling, Mark couldn't say no.
Two Rolexes, diamond rings. There's about $1 million right there.
You bought a watch worth $500,000.
Yes.
Are you nuts?
I just wanted to make her happy.
And material things made her happy?
Very, very happy.
Yagala even spent about $3 million buying and redecorating this house for Sandy in Las Vegas.
You were in love.
Yes, I was.
Or crazy.
I think both.
Mark Yagala has showered Sandy Bentley with millions of dollars worth of gifts. Fur, car, jewelry. And it's that jewelry that becomes key to this case.
Why? Because after Yagala and Sandy broke up, she took that jewelry into her relationship with her new boyfriend, Michael Tardio, one of the two men murdered in that SUV.
Every day I feel like a fool. You know, my greed And then, you know, her greed, you know, resulted in the murders of two innocent people.
Two dead young men. An unsolved double homicide. Linked to jewelry and a Playboy model. And at the beginning of the investigative trail, a self-indulgent Wall Street millionaire.
Playmates, porn stars, the list was endless. I just became a sex-crazed maniac.
11 years ago, Mark Yagala was living most every man's fantasy. Having sex with some of the most beautiful women in the world.
It was exhilarating. It was a drug. It was my high.
No small feat, especially for this 33-year-old man who stands slightly over 5 feet tall and who considered himself a nerd, growing up in rural Pennsylvania.
I was ranked number one in my class. The kids resented me because of that.
Do you have any girlfriends in high school?
No.
Ever go on a date in high school?
No.
But he did take a keen interest in the stock market.
I started spending a lot of time in the library, ordered the Wall Street Journal, ordering annual reports, digging into stocks.
At age 13?
Correct.
So, what was the attraction?
I had developed sort of this fairy tale from movies that if you get money, you become successful, you get the girl.
Like in the movie, Wall Street.
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
I wanted to be Gordon Gekko.
Yagala says he made $100,000 trading stocks while in high school.
My cousin backed me, and I started trading S&P futures, some tech stocks.
And he made millions more just a few years later with a hedge fund he'd set up.
It was intoxicating. I was having a great time.
Mark was living his dream.
As I was making money, it started with prostitutes.
By his own reckoning, he paid for thousands of them.
Sometimes 3-4 different girls a day.
In fact, Mark Yagala says he became totally addicted to sex.
I was just out of control. In a strip club, in a bathroom, whatever I had to do to get sex.
It was a compulsion.
Brian Bieber is Yagala's lawyer.
Mark Yagala's conduct makes what Tiger Woods did now look like a junior high school student going through puberty.
Mark had a huge appetite for women. I mean, he would have a girl every day of the week if he could.
Yagala's insatiable appetite led him to this striking woman, Michelle Braun, who's known as the sex queen of LA.
And I was arguably the most successful madam in the history of the world.
She was the first person to really use the internet to offer prostitutes.
Braun ran this website, nickysgirls.com.
I only worked with famous women, penthouse pets, Playboy playmates, porn stars, actresses, models.
And she claims she offered these most desirable women to some of the world's wealthiest men, most notably Tiger Woods.
I never discussed sex with the girls or the clients. What I was being paid for was an introduction.
Try telling that to Mark Yagala, who was one of Braun's earliest clients.
And what would a girl like that cost you, typically?
Anywhere from $5,000 a night to $50,000 a night.
So the geek in high school who couldn't get a date was now buying some of the most exotic women on planet Earth.
Any woman I wanted, yes.
Were you also lavishing them with gifts?
Yes.
Yagala says he couldn't help himself. He bought many of his escorts expensive cars, furs, jewelry, even houses, costing him millions. But it was only when another woman introduced Mark to Sandy Bentley, who he began dating, that his spending really went into orbit.
All the other girls were gold diggers, but I'd say Sandy was an educated gold digger.
They were together for 13 months.
Was Mark in love with Sandy?
Madly in love.
Was Sandy in love with him?
Madly in love with his money. Yes.
The most expensive girl I've ever met in my life.
How much did you spend on her?
About $6 to $7 million.
$6 to $7 million?
Yes.
So how did Mark Yagala manage to pay for all of this?
I was taking client money and there was no boundaries.
You were scamming your clients.
Yes.
Instead of investing their money in stocks, he used it to pay for his incredibly expensive sexcapades.
He was running one big Ponzi scheme.
He just was the definition of greed.
Mike Degnan is a special agent with the FBI.
He just took whatever he could get and used it for his own personal use without any remorse for the people he was stealing it from.
But Mark Yagala's world began to crumble.
He owed a brokerage firm over $7 million, and they were asking for their money.
I dug such a deep hole, $40, $50 million, that I could not get myself out of.
When Sandy got wind of it all, Yagala says she dumped him.
Pretty much did not want to have anything to do with me. She was moving on.
Moving on, he says, but keeping most of his extravagant gifts, including a fortune in jewels. Police believe it was that jewelry that got Michael Tardio and Chris Monson murdered.
Michael Tardio didn't have street smarts.
Bill Cox and other investigators believe Sandy hatched a plan with Michael Tardio to sell some of Yagala's gifts under the table to raise some fast cash.
Oh, I'm a sucker. Sandy was a total manipulator.
Mark Yagala is bitter and angry. But is he capable of murder?
Did you have anything to do with the murder of Michael Tardio and Chris Monson?
Just like in the Good Book, all roads in this case seem to lead to the Garden of Eden nightclub. Almost all the players in our mystery met and partied here. Mark Yagala, Hef and the Bentley twins.
It catered to celebrities and big money people in Los Angeles.
It's where Michael Tardio, working the door, became involved with Sandy Bentley.
Michael Tardio and Sandy Bentley's relationship, what was that? Was this an affair? Were they lovers?
It looked like that Sandy was the smitten one here, much more so than Michael.
Happy New Year!
Sandy may have played the gold digger in her past affairs, but this relationship seemed different.
She did care a lot about Michael Tardio. Sandy definitely did.
And Michael and Sandy became a hot item in the hottest club in Hollywood.
You're really rubbing elbows with the creme de la creme, and you're in the fast lane.
Right across the street, that big black blob right now used to be one of the hottest places in the city.
Yeah, it used to be the Garden of Eden.
And along with all the glamour and celebrity, a seedier element was also drawn to the garden. Detectives started focusing on that as they investigated deeper into Michael Tardio's life.
You believe this is the club where Michael Tardio met the people ultimately responsible for his murder?
Yes, we just don't know who that person is.
On the detective's short list of suspects, Sandy Bentley's former lover, Mark Yagala. But there was one problem. Yagala had an ironclad alibi. He was in prison after pleading guilty to charges related to his massive Ponzi scheme.
Mark took in money, he handed out false statements, and then he spent the money on leggy blondes.
Attorney Eugene Licker was responsible for finding out where Yagala squandered his victims' millions so they could get some money back. A major target, the gifts Yagala lavished on Sandy.
The judge ordered Sandy Bentley to hand over to us all the assets that Mark Yagala gave her, which included the house, the jewelry, the cars.
Faced with losing everything, police say a desperate Sandy Bentley went to her new boyfriend, Michael Tardio, for help.
So Sandy literally had nothing now. They were kicking her out of her house. So at this point, Michael says to her, well, why don't you just take a little bit of the jewelry? You could sell it.
And that's just what happened. Watch this grainy surveillance video a private eye shot at Sandy's Las Vegas mansion the week those two allegedly took the jewels.
Sandy lets him in and says, here's the stuff. And then Michael looks at it and says, no, that's not enough. You need to take more.
It's estimated that Michael and Sandy made off with nearly $1 million in jewels and furs.
Now, Sandy Bentley claims this was Tardio's idea, correct?
Yes.
But Tardio, of course, is dead. Do we really know the ultimate truth?
No, we don't know the ultimate truth. But Michael wasn't a criminal. Michael was trying to do something for Sandy to help jumpstart her new life after Mark Yagala.
This video shows Eugene Licker inventorying the jewels that were left behind after Sandy was evicted.
If you were going to buy this, how much would it cost?
$250,000.
The Pretty Woman necklace wasn't there. It was definitely worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. The canary diamond ring wasn't there, which I know was at least invoiced at $500,000.
Empty.
All cleaned out.
Yeah. There's only three bracelets there. I bought her a lot of bracelets. That was empty.
Fearful that she would be prosecuted for the missing jewels, Sandy told Eugene Licker they were lost or stolen by someone else.
Sandy Bentley not only lied to us about what had happened to the so-called missing jewelry, but she took it. She stole it.
Stole it and then tried to fence it through her boyfriend, Michael Tardio, back at the Garden of Eden. Their price for the treasure? $1 million cash. Who had that kind of money? This is where a strange story gets even more bizarre. Meet wealthy jewelry collector Linda Kim.
Linda, you are wearing very beautiful jewelry. This is a 14-carat diamond.
Yes.
You know quality jewelry.
I know quality jewelry, yeah.
Linda Kim also knows scandal.
You're very famous in South Korea. Is that right?
I got the one big trouble with this Korean government, you know?
Big trouble is putting it lightly. An international weapons broker, in 2000, Kim was the central figure in a sex and bribery scandal that nearly toppled the South Korean government. 2 years after that scandal, Michael Tardio came to her at the hotel she owned in L.A. with what seemed like the deal of a lifetime.
I was so surprised. Very special jewelry.
High-quality jewelry?
Very high-quality jewelry.
But the deal seemed fishy, and she sent him on his way.
Something wrong, you know?
By this time, too many people knew about the jewelry, including a lot of the wrong people, leaving a lot of questions about who murdered Michael Tardio and Christopher Monson.
Here she comes. Here she comes.
Here we go, guys.
Get ready, guys.
Sandy Bentley. I'm Peter Van Sant with 48 Hours.
I miss my brother, I miss Chris, and they were good guys.
With few leads, no arrests, and the investigation going nowhere, the families of Michael Tardio and Christopher Monson made a public plea for help.
And the guy who did it is out there, so please try and help us find them.
I spent 4 years on this case. I put thousands of hours into it. I know that there's witnesses out there.
From the very beginning, Detective Bill Cox, now retired, had little to go on from the burned Mercedes at the crime scene.
When the investigators looked through the vehicle, there was no DNA, there were no fingerprints.
And the million in jewels, gone. But they did find Michael Tardio's cell phone, and records show Tardio's girlfriend, Sandy Bentley, had talked with him just moments before he was murdered. And after questioning regulars at the Garden of Eden nightclub, investigators learned about those high-end jewels.
They found out that Michael and Chris were selling this jewelry.
But Sandy Bentley, the woman who bared it all on the pages of Playboy, suddenly had something to hide.
When the investigators brought her in a day or so after the murder, she denied the fact that they were out selling jewelry. Sandy wasn't real cooperative. Sandy was out to protect herself.
We're heading north of Los Angeles right now, trying to find Sandy Bentley. We'd requested an interview with her. She turned us down, but we feel as though there's some questions that have to be asked and need to be answered.
Sandy Bentley, I'm Peter Van Sant with 48 Hours. We're doing a story about Michael Tardio, and I wanted to ask you, what responsibility do you think you bear for Michael Tardio's death and Christopher Monson's death? Can you answer that question? Did you love Michael Tardio? Why won't you talk to us? Why didn't you help the police investigate this case?
Sandy finally did open up to the cops when, months after the murders, they turned up the heat.
I just told her that you may end up going to jail. And I don't know if you want to go to the 77th jail. It didn't look like you'd fit in down there.
Sandy eventually agreed to cooperate in the murder investigation. In exchange, she would not be prosecuted for making off with the jewelry.
So she decided she was going to just tell us the truth. I have to believe that she told me the truth.
Sandy now admitted they were trying to sell those jewels and that Michael had finally found a buyer at the Garden of Eden.
Michael Tardio had been talking to a guy at a nightclub, and this person knew someone that was interested in this jewelry. So Michael Tardio asked him if he could set up a meet.
It was with a mysterious man known as Mr. Big.
He's got a lot of money. He drives fancy cars. Michael found out that this deal was set up for the Labor Day weekend.
September 1st, 2002. It would be Michael Tardio's last day alive.
Michael just started preparing to set this deal up. Rented the car.
Looking to play the part for his meeting with Mr. Big, Tardio rents a black Mercedes. He also tried to find one of these cash counters in anticipation of his million-dollar deal.
Like the guy you're going to sell the stuff to is going to sit in the car while you feed money through the cash machine to count it. But I think Michael just was a victim of too much television or too much reading.
But was Michael getting nervous about the deal? Linda Kim says that he visited her a second time, this time just hours before the murder, hoping she would reconsider buying the jewels.
Did Michael Tardio seem desperate to you at that
desperate,
time?
Desperate, yeah, exactly, yeah. So I feel a bit uncomfortable.
Linda said no.
Some jewelries bring me the bad luck, bad energy.
Linda wasn't the only one who sensed bad energy.
Mark!
Michael asked a Hollywood stuntman, like these guys, to serve as muscle for the deal. The stuntman declined.
Once this guy said no, then Michael had to rely on his best friend at the time, Chris Monson.
And Chris Monson did what best friends do.
Christopher Monson is really the tragedy in this case, in the sense that he wanted to be there to make sure nothing happened to his friend.
Finally, at around 9:30, Michael and Christopher set out on their fatal rendezvous.
All the jewelry had been cleaned, all ready to go.
Their first stop was this restaurant on Sunset Boulevard, where cops believe they met Mr. Big.
Do you have a sense of who this Mr. Big is based on your own investigation?
No.
You don't?
Not a clue.
After meeting the prospective buyer, Mr. Big, they head up into the Hollywood Hills.
Not knowing who you're meeting, following them to a location where you don't know where you're going.
At 11:30, Sandy made that last call to Michael.
And he says they were driving through the Mount Olympus area. And that was the end of the conversation. And that was the last conversation she had with them.
Less than 2 hours later,
it was a surprise attack. These guys were caught completely off guard.
Police believe Michael and Chris were shot somewhere in these hills.
And then the car is driven down to the North Hollywood area where it set a fire.
Let there be no mistake, this is a really brutal crime. And somebody knows what happened.
And it was Sandy Bentley who would provide police with the most significant clue. A phone number Michael gave her right before he left for the meeting.
Michael told Sandy, if anything happens, call this number.
And that phone number links to the man who may hold the key to solving these murders. Back in 2002, the strongest lead cops had was that telephone number Michael Tardio had left with his girlfriend, Sandy Bentley. It linked to a person who would play a central role in the investigation.
This person of interest has been interviewed a number of times. He's been surveilled a number of times. There's been a lot of pressure put on this person of interest.
48 Hours has learned he's talking about Michael Jacobs, a convicted felon seen here in a 1999 mugshot after resisting arrest. People from the Garden of Eden nightclub told us he and Michael Tardio discussed selling the jewels. Police believe Jacobs brought Tardio and Mr. Big together for the million-dollar deal.
Michael Jacobs has to know who the guy is that he set Michael Tardio up with, because he's the middleman.
Police say evidence shows that in the hours before the killings, there were multiple calls between the cell phones of Tardio and Michael Jacobs during the day and into the night. In fact, Jacobs' cell phone showed activity in the area where Tardio and Monson went to meet, according to cops, Mr. Big, before heading up here into the Hollywood Hills. Jacob's cell phone also showed activity, and this is important, in the area where the bodies were found.
There's no doubt in our mind, Michael Jacobs is the key to the case.
Hey, Mike, it's Chris O'Connell from 48 Hours.
After a two-month search, investigative producer Chris O'Connell finally got Michael Jacobs on the phone from our office in New York.
You knew Michael Tardio. You knew Christopher Munson. You know, you're one of the last people seen talking to them.
By law, we're prohibited from recording Jacobs' voice.
Thanks, Mike. All right, bye.
Is it your sense that Michael Jacobs knows much more about this case than he told you in this conversation?
He knows that this is about jewels, but he won't say that.
O'Connell flies to Los Angeles.
He said he wanted to meet tonight. Let's see if he's for real.
He doesn't have an address for Jacobs, just a phone number.
I don't think you want to meet. I think you want to talk and sort of find out what I know.
But when they finally connect, Jacobs gets cold feet.
Don, you've confirmed a lot of things that I've heard, and I'm going to use that.
Including the fact that Sandy Bentley did call him that night looking for Tardio. Jacobs refused an on-camera interview. He also refused to answer any questions about the jewelry deal, except to say that he had nothing to do with the murders and that he, quote, sleeps well at night.
He is the one who could actually blow this case open, but he just doesn't want to be cooperative.
At the time of the murders, Jacobs was questioned extensively by police, but they never had evidence to charge him. For now, this investigation has hit a wall.
Is this case solvable?
Yes. Well, I've always felt that it was solvable.
The woman at the center of it all, who once wore those millions in jewels, Playboy cover girl Sandy Bentley, is a little less glamorous today. She is married and a mother. Her former sugar daddy, who bought all those jewels, Mark Yagala, is broke and still owes millions to the people he scammed.
You know, I go from living every man's fantasy to having nothing.
No women.
No women. In my case, people lost money. Two people now have lost their lives.
And the other mystery is, where did all those jewels go?
Nobody find those jewels?
No.
All disappeared?
It's all disappeared.
They may cut up the jewels, get rid of them. It's long gone. I mean, you can't even trace it.
Very lucky I didn't buy that jewelry. I didn't get involved with that deal, you know? If I buy that one, and what's going to happen? They're going to kill me?
And so, for now, we end this story the way it began. On the streets of Hollywood, a crime unsolved, and two promising young men dead.
But authorities believe that with your help, they can solve this mystery and find the killer or killers of Michael Tardio and Christopher Munson.
As we sit here talking today, there's a killer out there.
Yep.
A killer in your town.
Yep.
Who's a free man.
I would love more than anything to just have one little lead. It's amazing what we can do with one little lead.